Hi and welcome to the Australasian Special Events 2020 project. I'm Trevor Connell, and like all of you, I'm currently practicing physical distancing from my friends and peers. But rather than being stuck in social isolation, each week I'm Zooming in with someone who has made a career in our event industry and asking them to share their story.
Just going back to your trip to Japan and that early involvement with Rotary. Rotary has remained quite a big part of your life.
Oh, absolutely. I became a Rotarian in 1993. Up till then, I really didn't think I had the time to be able to devote to Rotary. But in 1993, I decided it was time, and I had the opportunity to, because also they weren't accepting women into Rotary until about 1989, 1990. So I was one of the first women to join the Rotary Club of Sydney. Then I was president for the 90th birthday of that club in 2010-11. We've got our centenary coming up early next year. And I couldn't have done it without Diana Armstrong, who came to me for 3 weeks when she retired, when she turned 60, and retired again from me when she turned 76. So another amazing woman in my life. I am still in Rotary, and Aranex has just done the 10th Rotary New South Wales Police Awards end of last year. We love our affiliation with Rotary, and we get a lot of joy out of it, some knowledge for the staff, and they enjoy doing their events. Pro bono, most of the work we do for Rotary is pro bono.
Now, the next little hiccup, 9/11.
Ah, that was a killer, wasn't it? In more ways than one. It sent all the corporates into their bunkers and stopped the global economy in its tracks. A bit like what we are experiencing now, only it was about terror, not disease. So including the concern of the terrorist spread of anthrax. Anyway, we did our first ever retrenchments in 2001. So not so long after that, it was GFC in 2008.
Yeah,
which brought about by excessive spending of many countries around the world and poor fiscal management. That lasted about 5 years for us before businesses around the world started to pick up and our DMC business got back into swing, because our company is not just conferences, it's also DMC, Destination Management Company, looking after incentives, mostly incentives from the Americas and some from Europe and occasionally from Asia. So we tend to do expat-type conferences coming out of Asia. Out of the biggest we've handled, actually came out of Europe, was Spanish-speaking, and it was for a large Spanish insurance company, which meant the delegates came from all different Spanish-speaking countries. And that was in 2008, so we were lucky to get that one in. And the challenge we had with that was that we were only appointed 10 months before it happened. They had somebody else a couple of years before that, but that relationship fell over and then they came to Aranex. And what happened for us through that was we did everything we possibly could, spreading them across hotels, and we learned a lot, because the Spanish culture and the Spanish menu is quite different. For me, it's not unfamiliar. It's quite similar to the Italian.
Yeah.
But what was significant about that one was we couldn't find a venue to house the presidential dinner. And so we had to Australia lost about $3 million in revenue from that. It had to be held in Bangkok on the way through. So that was a shame. But that enabled us. We actually organised charter planes for them.
So was that because there was nowhere big enough? Or
there was no space available.
Oh, right.
2008. We just couldn't, in the time that they were here.
Oh, because of that short lead time?
That's right.
Right.
There was no space available. We would have converted whatever we could have into the right venue, but it just didn't exist. As an owner, one has to focus on what you can save and prune in these really tough times, and you have to recognise what you cannot save. It's devastating, And it's, of course, the loyal and good staff don't necessarily understand your actions at the time, but it has to be done if there is to be survival. So you have to make certain staff redundant.
Now, we've seen various epidemics and pandemics in, well, over a century. So let's just go there for a little bit then.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, SARS was in 2003.
Yeah.
And for us, that was quite significant because we had, first of all, we were hosting the International Association of Professional Conference Organisers in February, and we only got 19 participants, including me. That was quite devastating for us. We should have got 45 to 50, but because everybody had to stay home and look after their clients, they couldn't come. So what happened with that was that I also didn't have the budget to do a lot of things, so I imposed upon our industry colleagues, and everybody supported me fantastically, and we brought some of the conference into our offices at the time, and we brought the animals, for koalas and kangaroos and whatever, into our office at the time for lunch with us, and we did some pretty amazing things. We did the sailing race on Sydney Harbour, and what was really wonderful about that was the fact that it was an intimate conference. So I've been explaining to some of our clients coming through this pandemic that, you know, good can always come out of adversity, and some of the good that came out of that for both Aranex and Australia was that we put on a conference that was sensationally successful. The end result was that conference remained, each year all the participants vote, and we remained top of the top 10 for 10 years. You fall off after 10 years, so I was very proud of that.
Yeah. So now, speaking of the current pandemic, how's that affected your business then?
It's devastating. So we have no revenue. So we're no different to any other business in this.
But what's the hit, mate? Like how many conferences have gone?
Something like 40 conferences have 40 conferences. I think it was 39 from this year, and early next year have been postponed. We've only had to cancel maybe three. I'm not sure what the number is, but three or four. So I should know the number. That's not a very good statement for me. But I think it's about four. I think we've only had to cancel four meetings.
When are they being postponed to then?
They've moved to 2021 through to 2023.
Is that a postponement or does that mean it's been cancelled this year and is going to be held then, or was it?
Technically, I think you're probably right, but if we technically said it was cancelled, that would mean that the client would lose all of their deposits and everything. So from a business perspective, the wisest counselling that we've been able to give to clients is do not cancel.
Right.
Let's postpone. So we've postponed whatever we can. And that's very healthy for the industry because that enables us to make those conferences happen in a better time. The better time from an inbound perspective is going to be sometime into 21. I'm not expecting that there'll be anything this year. It's been very interesting for me because I've actually had clients from research institutes come to me and ask my advice on what would happen back in March. And my advice pretty much has come to be. So I explained to them that I felt within Australia we would see most of the disease, if it was contained the way it has been, pass by May, and then we would... we would expect to be able to host meetings once we could after that. Now, what I didn't expect was for the borders of Australia to be closed through till probably the end of this year.
At least.
I should have expected it because we ran a webinar for all of our clients, and we had as speakers our really experienced clients. And Professor John McKenzie from Perth is one of the eminent people in viruses, in virology, and he was at the centre of SARS in 2003, and he told us all on that webinar that it will not be happening for 12 months.
So
his advice appears to be right. So, but I'm thinking that, you know, there's, first of all, people have been so well educated and trained about social distancing and made so aware of what the disease can do, that that they people are hesitant. So I'm not seeing myself a great desire for people to rush out and be in a crowded room with other people, nor am I, and of course we've got the experience of that having happened in the United States and then people suffering as a result. So that'll just reinforce that learning. The other thing is, as we get into next year, I do believe once we get into 21 and it starts to be a faded memory, that there will be an absolute desperate desire to meet with colleagues around the world, and we will actually see some of our meetings far exceed what we had originally anticipated. But that has to be when we've overcome the access problems and also the mental, the attitude about travelling.
So how much of your business is Australian-based?
These days it's probably 50-50.
Right, right. So what are you seeing, or what are you expecting to come back then with just Australia only, or say Australia and New Zealand conferencing?
We would not be advising any of our clients to get too ambitious through 2020.
Right.
Best to take a rest on the year, use the year to really reassess what they do and to organise their plans for the future. We're working with the clients. We have, through this time, whilst we've had to reduce hours and we've had to really watch our bottom line, our staff have been absolutely superb insofar as they... I talk about volunteering, and they are volunteering at work. So, and you know, volunteering starts at home when you hit tough times. So, what I'm seeing is a very courageous group of young people, who really care about the business and their clients, and are taking every advantage to put in the learning time that that they can. And also to support each other and to support the business and support their clients. So we're doing all kinds of things through this year. We're not quiet or silent with our clients at all. In fact, our e-newsletter will be going out at least bi-monthly. And next week, the staff across the whole company are having a three-day virtual conference, which they've provided all the content for, and it will be a great experience for them. They'll learn what our clients will be living through when they're involved in virtual conferences. So we'll come out with a first-hand experience. And the staff came up with that idea, and I think it's a terrific one. So there's too much to do through this era, and it's just really good when everybody wants to knuckle down and do it.
Yeah, go on.
Oh, swine flu is really interesting because swine flu is like COVID-19. It's like SARS.
It's related, yes.
But can anybody remember swine flu? Probably not. Why? Why?
Because it didn't come to Australia.
Well, it could have, but and I'm not sure to what extent it did. But because the media was so focused on the global downturn of the GFC, it didn't make it into the news.
Gotcha, yeah.
It was there, it was there, but it wasn't on the front page. It was on the page 7 or 10 or whatever. So I find that absolutely fascinating that we could have actually had something similar happening, and if there's something that's more newsworthy, it gets pushed aside. So doesn't that tell us more about our media, not just in Australia but globally?
Yeah. You're involved with ICA, the International Convention and Congress Association, and the Executive Connection. Would you like to tell us about them?
Yeah. I attended my first ICA Congress in 1985 in Bangkok. In 1987, we became members of ICA, and then about 1996, I went on the board of ICA. I spent a total of 6 years on the board of ICA, and that was fantastic exposure for me to the global convention scene, and it set me up with also a pretty good network. Out of that network, I was invited to join INCON, the International Convention Services group of PCOs. So that came out of my ICA appointment. And then the other thing that came out of the ICA appointment was YAPCO, the International Association of Professional Conference Organisers. So those two I joined about the same time in about 1997, 98. just been fantastic opportunities to rub shoulders with like kind around the world and just learn from first-hand experience. It's been and the network. Then Incon is a partnership of PCOs.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in the partnership of PCOs, you know, it's a board. So we're each a director within a company that we own. Mm. And I've seen PCOs come and go over the years, and you just learn a lot of what's happening in the different countries around the world and how to run excellent meetings. Apart from that, back here in Australia, I was still involved in MIA. Yeah. I've always been involved in MIA to some extent. I became the president latter part of the 90s. Again, I'd already been president in the early 80s, so when it was ACE. Late 90s, I also was invited to join the Executive Connection Tech, which is a CEO forum that has groups of up to 15 or 16 CEOs in the group, and we have a chairman. We meet once a month for a whole day. Sorry. We have a speaker in the morning, yep. And then after lunch, one of us hosts the day.
Yep.
And after lunch, the host has a spot for an hour, mm-hmm. and then it's like an advisory board, and they sit around the table. We put our issues on the table, and you can discuss those and get really great advice.
So now you started working with some medical meetings.
Yes, we had been endeavouring to get appointed to a major medical meeting for years because we became a PCO in 1990, and I really was looking forward to winning a big meeting. So our business was evolving, and after a decade of not being able to win big medical meetings, even though we thought it was our breakthrough in 1997 when we did otorhinolaryngology head and neck surgery, we did not win big meetings till the new millennium. We did well in the major association meetings that were more in the corporate business world because other PCOs had a stranglehold on the major medical market. Our DMC business, our incentive business, had peaks and troughs, with our biggest being the 1,460 guest incentive out of Spain. Mm-hmm. In 2008... I took IT staff to – we had an IT department of several staff then. So I took three of them to Tokyo to see our Incon partners' technology expertise, and that triggered the growth of our technology applications that broke new ground in the scientific meetings market. So on a global basis, we're known well for some of the new technology that we've got.
Now, it's been a pretty big career. Is there any – particular standout highlight?
Oh, it has to be the Olympics. There were 24 Millennium sponsors, 11 international sponsors, and 13 national sponsors, and only one of them used an Australian company for all of their hospitality and other arrangements. BHP chose Aranex, then we were tour hosts. What an amazing experience. A wonderful client and a milestone in our lives. It was an awesome 3 weeks with an awesome workload, and that was all well planned and well executed. So whilst that was a major highlight, so were the LNG events that we've done, the first one in 1998 and then recently 2016. As it's the major export item for Australia, we're dealing with the giants in the business world.
Now, that 2016 one, that was in Perth?
In Perth, both in Perth.
Yep. So an event of that size, you're based in Sydney. What's it like operating, remotely, but with a remote venue? Because you had to extend the Perth Convention Centre for that 2016 one.
Oh, I think what's really interesting about COVID-19 is it's proved that you can do that. So it's no different. You know, we didn't have to be in Perth all the time. You don't have to always be in the city where you're going to organise an event in order to be able to organise.
Yep.
It's fascinating. But, you know, we're experts in not only logistics but also in consultancy to our clients. So our clients can't spend all their time with us. The reason they employ us is because they don't want to pay for it themselves or engage all the staff themselves. Mm. So we have no problems. And I have since 1970-something, I've been organising everything in all over Australia. It's not new for us. It's the way we've been. You know, I miss not doing as much in Adelaide as we used to do, but we're still doing lots in Perth and everywhere.
And are you working internationally at all?
We do the occasional business internationally. It's not been a focus for us.
Right.
I truly believe that core PCO does have its values, but the reality is when an international meeting is hosted in a country, I think the best type of meeting has to be a meeting where the locals have a strong involvement. If somebody overseas, whether it's be an in-house event management department by the association itself or whether it's a core PCO overseas, I think that they lose a lot of essential elements to make a conference what it is. Some conferences, therefore, will be hugely successful and some won't be as successful. But that gets back to the locals and the local culture and the way in which they conduct the meeting. What's really interesting about conference organising is that most major cities around the world don't have more than two major PCOs.
Right.
It's fascinating, but you go to Europe, you go anywhere, you hardly find more than two major. You find lots of little PCOs.
Yeah.
That's a necessity for each city, but you don't find too many big ones. Right. And why is that? Because there's a limited number of meetings, which is why the core PCOs, the bigger ones, have expanded out around the world. But what have they mostly done? You know, there's only a handful that are on a global scale. Out of the United States, there are a number of meeting planners who want to be on a global scale, but it's mostly for corporates.
Right.
So they want to have the global footprint. But if you look at what they do, it's very different to what a PCO does.
Right. How many international conferences do you do?
How many have we done altogether? Mm. Oh, we'd be close to 2,000, I think.
Right.
2,000 meetings, whether that's all international, I don't think so.
Right. Right, yep.
Because there have been years when we have done, you know, we've done, let me think, I've been in the industry my 51st year this year. Mm. So if I go back to, even before we were PCOs, we were doing significant parts of many, many international meetings.
Gotcha.
In fact, we didn't do national meetings until 1988. Up till then, it was all international for us.
And government work?
I'll start with 1995. We did the Global Cultural Diversity Conference, which was for Prime Minister and Cabinet, and again in 2000, Corroboree 2000. In 2006, we did the Treasury meetings. 2005, we did International Statistical Institute for the ABS, and it peppered in amongst those lots of other meetings. I mentioned earlier on CAMELAR. We did CAMELAR. CAMELAR started out as the Antarctic Consultative Treaty, where we did languages, and then that morphed into CAMELAR, that first meeting.
Mm.
And then CAMELAR, we did that for 13 years.
Mm.
So we've done a lot of government meetings. We understand government.
Yeah.
And I think we do their meetings really well. So it's an area they're not highly profitable for a PCO because there's a lot of time invested in working with the client. So they're a challenging meeting in many ways, but we've enjoyed them and we've certainly had some fantastic results.
Mm. And microbiology?
Oh, microbiology is our first client. For our PCO era. So in 1989, amidst all that terrible time, I got this letter in the mail asking me to submit a tender for a PCO arrangement. And I wasn't a PCO. So first of all, I really didn't know what to do. And secondly, it just wasn't my bag. But for whatever reason, I put in a tender. And Well, the reason would have been that I had no money. I was looking to fill the gaps, you know, so that's what caused us to do it. So
hungry.
Yeah, hungry, so hungry. So the client came in to interview us, and then I didn't hear from them for two months, and I wasn't particularly perturbed. I had so much to do. Mm. And then 2 months later, they came back for a second interview, and then I got a letter in the mail to say we'd been appointed. Oh, this is interesting. We're going to do a conference. They were our first conference client. Mm. And that committee are personal friends today, 30 years later, almost. Mm. They're personal friends. We actually still have get-togethers. So we've got a get-together coming up in 2022. Mm. And what was so wonderful about them was that we used to meet in the chairman's house at Eastwood. And we got to know each other well. We didn't really understand much about scientific program at the time, and so they held our hand and taught us what we knew. So they were just a wonderful client. We were expecting to get, they normally were getting 600 to 800 people. We got 1,600. So it's the power of a bond, the power of working together, the power of just being enthusiastic and imaginative. Remembering I'm absolutely desperate for funds, so through my desperate stage, I actually produced some pretty amazing events for that group and did it on a
shoestring.
Mm. You know, so it was just lovely, so lovely. I really enjoy the scientific world. Mm. I love scientists, and when COVID-19 broke out, we can go to our clients, and whether it's in Melbourne at the Doherty Institute or whether it's in Perth or wherever, and our clients are so supportive in giving us the advice that we need and working with us. It's just lovely.
Now, looking at your industry and your competitors, it's dominated by men. Have you ever felt discriminated against as a woman trying to break into this, has there been a glass ceiling you've had to shatter?
Well, funny you should mention that. In 1987, I remember vividly when I was told I was not winning certain conference appointments because I had a husband who could care for me, whereas my competitor was a divorcee and needed the revenue. I was not losing on merit, you know. I was losing because I was a wife. It took me 2 years to get over that, Trevor. Eventually, I shrugged it off and got on with doing what I was good at, working hard and taking opportunities when they presented themselves. It was a good lesson, though. I'm not a feminist, but I have always supported women. I've matured over the years, and I do have a balanced workforce to deliver the best outcomes, and that works for us.
So I mentioned that at the top echelons, it's a lot of men. So like the associations, I bet you're dealing with men on those committees a lot. And yet it's the conferences are delivered primarily by women.
Well, the actual operational side for us, you know, we are still probably 70-something percent female, because it's just our biological nature. We're just good on detail and hardworking and doing all those things. But men are absolutely needed in this gender balance, because men bring to the operations a different perspective. And we need the talents of both men and women in running our business. So, but, you know, I must admit that there have certainly been a number of conference committees where it's been all male. Mm. And quite often, depending on the profession, quite often women are token members of the committee. But, you know, I understand that. And I also understand that I have had token female appointments over the years, and I've been grateful for that, because, you know, that's given me the chance to input in areas where in the past it was men only. So we've made a lot of progress, and I've seen a lot of progress through my career.
Yeah. Now, Tour Hosts was a very well-known brand. Why'd you change to Aranex, and what does it mean?
In 2009, after many years wanting to make a change, I remember David Beale used to say, "Oh, Roslyn, your name is terrible. This Tour Host, what's it mean, Roslyn?" And because it came out of my early years of being a tour guide and being a tour host, We also bought in 2006 the Meeting Planners in Melbourne. So we changed the name in 2009. So it took me quite a while to get the team together to be able to do that. We also had some fantastic consultants who worked with us both in the name change and also the design of that goes with a name change. So the name Aranex stands for Architects of Inspiring Experiences. The challenge was our domain name. I think we went through 380-something before we could get aranex.com.au. .com was already taken. Mm. So, you know, I wanted to be at the beginning of the alphabet because I'd always been at the end of the alphabet. And my staff at the time said, but we live in a technology world, Roslyn, that's not relevant anymore, but I can
show
you.
You're not in the yellow pages anymore.
That's right. So, but, the old name was from a bygone era. And we wanted to be known by something that reflected the new millennium. And it took 1 year to rebrand. And that was started with four senior staff and ended with over 60 staff. And the staff, we are organisers, so we should be able to do this. On one day, everything was changed. And I don't think they forgot a thing. Mm. It was amazing. It was wonderful. I was very proud of them. They did a great job.
Mm. Now, you mentioned when you were born, so this year is a significant milestone for you. So what's for the future? First up, for the business itself, for Aranex?
For the business? Well, the business is evolving, as it always has done. You know, in 2008, I decided I wanted to sell the business, and I wanted to be gone by the 30th of June 2010. But then the GFC struck, so that was the end of that thought. So my children aren't interested in the business. In 1995, I'd realised through good mentoring from somebody that I needed to change the way in which I ran my business, and I set it up as a business for sale. And then I learned when I joined tech, that's the way you should run every business. And so that served me well over the years by thinking that way. I took all the personal bits out of it, and set it up with the senior staff so they could see everything and so they could manage well and receive benefits from their efforts. Tech taught me to do this, and I also learned a lot of good business compliance and ideas to make us strong from tech, so it's very valuable there. Managing our personal wealth was also an essential part of management. So one has to take their chips off the table when they're there, which isn't always, and then leave enough money in there for reserves for rainy days. And I tell you, it's not raining this year. It's absolutely pouring, drowning. It's just as much as a koala can bear. The business has been very good to us and many of our team members. So when I finally retire, I plan to leave the business in good hands. Having talked about what I've just talked about, can I just say to anyone who's listening, if you're a business owner and looking for an outstanding coaching experience, please consider Tech, the Executive Connection. Over 12 years, I had two very different but inspirational chairmen and up to 15 fellow business owners in tech who gave me advice that was instrumental in some great decisions, and some became wonderful friends. Because what you find when you tech puts you into a group that they think you'll match. So what happens as we grow through life, if we do have a successful journey, and if you do accumulate wealth, you can have lifelong friends whom you love to bits, but you can't necessarily do everything with them because they're in a different bubble to your bubble. So that's been very useful for Angelo and me, that we actually have made these new friends who we're quite compatible with, not just in our interests, in our intellectual interests, cultural interests, but also in our financial interests.
So there's other organisations you've been involved in. You've mentioned MIA earlier on.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've had three fantastic organisations that have been very generous to me, and my only regret is that I didn't join them earlier. Mm-hmm. MIA was also an important networking and learning environment, which was very important to our development. So I needed MIA in my earlier days. Mm. It gave me the network. Mind you, I was party to other organisations as well, but I think MIA was the standout one.
Yep.
And it was standout because we all input and made it what it is. So the 5 decades that my business has been through has certainly seen metamorphic changes each decade. You know, overall, we stuck to our area of specialisation and change came to us. It was always well-calculated change and gradual. If anything, I have not been an overnight sensation. And I owe a lot to my sister Lorraine DeVito, who has been by my side for over 20 years and consulted me in the years before that. Right now, under Nicole Walker, we have an outstanding team which is evolving into this new decade, and I believe Aranex will be all the better for this pandemic. Although it will be a struggle, it's not going to be easy. But the spirit is there and the talent is more than I could hope for.
I loved looking at Nicole Walker's bio and discovered that she used to be a pyrotechnician with Foti Fireworks.
That's right, among her many talents.
It's good to know that you've got somebody taking over this business who's got such a good grounding at the grass level.
That's right. Now, she also went on to Eleanor Country Club, and she rose through the ranks there in catering, all for somebody who's so young. I like to say she's young because, you know, it's really great to see young people coming through this industry. And, you know, for some time there I was really worried. I couldn't see the new strata of very talented people who can take our industry to another level. But, you know, Nicole's not alone. There are others in the industry, and it's very exciting, I think.
Yep. Personally, your future?
Well, I live in the future, and I always have. You know, I get offended if somebody thinks I'm stuck in the past. Because I learn from the past and I carry many valuable experiences that have been beneficial not just in business but also for our industry and for me personally in my own family life. From a business perspective, I've always been able to see the future. My colleagues and my industry colleagues have always made comments about they can't believe I can tell what's going to happen through a whole decade, and I've been able to do that to some extent. But in the last decade, you know, it became a bit foggy, and so I thought it's about time I did something different. So when it's foggy and you can't see the future, you know, it's you have a feeling of being a little bit lost. I had poor health through the last decade. I had about 3 years where it was difficult for me just to get out of bed. But I got through it. I'm absolutely attuned to working my way through hospitalisation. I've been hospitalised over 40 times. And so I'm used to being resilient, bouncing back, you know, not really taking any notice of the fact that things are wrong with your body.
So this all relates back to your car accident?
Oh, back to my car accident. Most of it back to my car accident in 1970. Yep. The other thing is that I'm adventurous. And so, therefore, when you're adventurous, you get yourself into trouble. So I've actually, from my childhood right the way through, you know, my sister has hardly ever been to hospital. And it seemed to be a regular excursion for me. So anyway, that's life. Yep. Yeah.
So and the retirement then?
Oh, retirement. It's hard to think of retirement because I love my life in this industry. I really enjoy our clients and I'm in awe of our team members. You know, I love to watch them grow and develop. The diversity of our business is so interesting and I meet such fascinating people because there's so much to learn. I just love it. I look back on the decades and see the dramatic change from the first year to the last year of each decade, the evolution of our business and the industry and how we've responded to change. Running a business, though, I must say, is exciting, risk-taking, but it's a wonderful experience. Even in times of adversity like now, the thrill of achieving goals and better outcomes than expected is a reward for much effort. So the business is all about people too. You know, that's what I like. I've always been somewhat fascinated with the psychology of the people we deal with. And, you know, from clients, colleagues, competitors, staff members, my family members and friends all need attention. They pose challenges. They deliver delight. And they can cause stress. So it is an achievement to navigate each and every one of our relationships. So.
Now, it's been a stellar career, and there have been some accolades, and I was present when one of them was presented, 2008 in Alice Springs.
Oh, yes, yes.
So that was the Mia Life Achievement Award.
You know, that I've been very lucky, but the greatest honour of all, I think, is to receive it from your country. And I was lucky enough to receive my Australian honour very early for compared to most people. That was in 1999. When I opened the envelope telling me of my nomination, I was shocked in a very nice way. I was shocked. I received the Federal Minister's Reward for an outstanding contribution by an individual in front of 1,000 people at the Australian Tourism Awards, which that was a surreal appearance in 1998. I don't know how I got to the stage. I was in such amazing shock. My husband and I are a little competitive. In fact, my husband has never been with me when I've got an honour. You know, and I've always made a point, because we do awards nights and whatever, I've always made a point to, whenever I have an opportunity to explain, that if you're giving somebody an absolute super award, if you're giving somebody a super award, it's very important to have their loved ones around them. Mm. You know, you need to share it. Mm. And it's regretful for me that my husband was never there at any of these award ceremonies anyway. And my husband and I are a little bit competitive. So while he has 5 holes in one in golf competitions, not just any time but in competitions, I have had 6 Outstanding Persons Awards. But no doubt he'll better me at some stage. He'll get 6 and then 7. Anyway, look, it's a wonderful thought that there are persons who go to the trouble of putting you forward. So I received these accolades with great humiliation and appreciation, knowing that I'm the face for others who have made them possible. So, you know, when you get an award like that, first of all, only recently have I known an award is coming. So probably out of those. Of course, the Australian Honour I didn't know until I opened the envelope. Mm. And the one before, I was in shock. So I don't think it's always a good thing to just get it on the night, because you never know how you're going to react. Mm. But it's lovely. It's just lovely. So, but, you know, the part I feel guilty about when you get an award like that is that in my case, I'm not a loner. You know, I need other people around me. And I've had some wonderful people support me and make those awards possible. So I feel very fortunate, and I feel guilty that you know, it comes to me and not to the group. But anyway, that's life. So.
And does Angelo still go to the trots?
No. We sold the horses when the times were tough in the 90s. Angelo sold the horses.
Ah, right.
And that was the end of his racing career.
Right. So now it's just the golf course.
It's the golf course, keeps him busy, and the farm, because he's got an olive grove. We've got about 280 trees, and he's just about to move half of one of the olive groves to another paddock. So it never stops, Trevor. It never stops. There's just so much to do. So he's just built the chook pen. We've never lived at the farm. It's just for us, it's a getaway.
Yeah.
But our man who looks after the farm, because we have horses and a few other things, and the man who looks after the farm's in there every day, he just reduced his home to a small home, and so he's missing his chooks. So now he's got chooks at our farm. Yes, it's just there's lots to do, lots to do. Yeah.
Well, on that domestic note, I'd like to say thank you very much, Roslyn. It's been an absolute pleasure to spend this time with you. I've known you for a few decades, and it's been great of you to spend this time to have a chat to our podcast listeners.
Well, thank you, Trevor. Thank you. And to everybody out there, those of you that have supported me and helped me, I really want to say a big thank you over the years. It's been, you've made my life so interesting and so terrific. And so my career has been wonderful. I just have enjoyed every minute. So thank you, Trevor. And by the way, when you, who have done so much for our industry, look at these podcasts, but everything else as well, when are you going to tell your story?
Oh, yeah. One day. We'll see.
Anyway. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. I'd love to get your feedback, so please share your rating and comments in the appropriate place of your player or on the project website page. This podcast is produced by me, Trevor Connell, and edited by Samantha Latto. The theme music is composed and played by Duncan Latto.